All right, go ahead, talk. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast.
No.
Do it.
No.
Do it. Say, you're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. Do it. You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast. TheWordBros.com. Kevin.
Yeah.
My man's in them.
Me?
Kevin, who do we have this week on the podcast?
I think it's Jared Lupon.
You think?
I think, yeah. I think it is.
We just talked to him for like 45 minutes. What a nice fellow.
I got to try and pretend like this is all improvisational, Bob.
It is kind of. I mean, you know.
Yeah, sort of.
You know, you want to sound excited about your guest coming on so other people will be excited. Jared is a writer and comic creator. He has a book right now on Kickstarter that is called The Twin Blades, which sounds pretty cool. He said it's Mexicans with swords, and that sounds pretty fucking Mexicans with Aztec swords.
Which is amazing.
Which sounds pretty.
And I think, why would you not want to back that? It sounds like a Robert Rodriguez fever dream kind of concept for a book.
Yeah. So. And then he also has a book that came out in February called Dryfoot through Mad Cave Studios. And that book was hot to death. And we found out he's a big Wu-Tang Clan fan. So what's not to love?
I feel like now we have to play like something off of Triumph, you know, like play.
I'm not getting sued by RZA.
Really? You think you would do that? We just play the instrumental part, then you can't get sued.
I don't want to get a cease and desist.
No. or you want Ghost to come to your house and break your jaw.
I don't want, I mean, I'm soft. Ghost would fuck me up. I don't want to mess with the Wallaby King. So yeah, so we're going to find out all about his comics, and we're also going to find out his top five Wu-Tang solo joints. Uh-oh, it's going to be exciting. So stay tuned for that. All right, Jared Lujan, it's nice to meet you, my man. Actually, we have actually never met before, huh?
We have not.
Okay. So this is a first. Have you done lots of podcasting in the past? Is this your first soiree, if you will, into podcasting?
No. I've done a few.
Nice. Yeah. How did that go?
Mostly good. I did, like for Dryfoot, I was on like a half dozen. For Twin Blades, I've only done two or three.
Okay.
One of them never posted it, so I don't know if it found me super intolerable. But the other one went fine. I don't know if the other one was just like, no, he sucks. We're done with him. But
that's awesome. But at least you have a good attitude about the whole thing. You're like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, I was like, maybe I should message them and make sure everything's okay. But then I was like, man, if they think I suck, I really don't want to have a conversation with them about
it. Now, why would you suck, though? That would be my question. You seem like a personable young man. You're wearing an Infinity Gauntlet shirt. You're clearly in the business. Like, why would they think you suck? I don't get it.
I have no idea. I think, like, before the actual recording of the podcast started, he kept saying things like Latino, and I really don't like that term. I really try and get people to use Latin or Latinx.
Okay.
And I'm pretty insistent on that. But I was like, if you don't want to say that, you don't have to say that because I'm Mexican. So you can just say Mexican, you know, like that's fine. And it would kind of made it a really awkward situation, but I didn't think I was being a dick about it. I was just like, we should use that term because that's the better term. And then he never posted it. So he still follows me on Twitter. So maybe he's just like, oh, I thought he was going to talk about Wu-Tang Clan more. And then he didn't.
So are you,
can we talk about Wu-Tang Clan more?
Yeah.
We can talk about the Wu-Tang Clan all night.
Who's your favorite member of the Wu-Tang Clan?
I was getting ready to say, this is how you know. All right. He's in.
You're
he's
in. Because I in. Have. Do you want to hear my Wu-Tang
Bobby
Clan
has
theory?
A theory. He has a theory you need to hear.
Go for it.
All right. This is my Wu-Tang theory. People who don't really like or listen to that much Wu-Tang Clan or white boys automatically say their favorite member of the Wu-Tang Clan is Method Man.
Yeah, I hear a lot of RZA, and I'm like, RZA barely raps anymore. Like, he was a, and I don't, I'm not disrespecting the Abbott, but like, but yeah, Method Man is definitely, I think one of the more like iconic ones. But I'm really about Ghost, Inspect a Deck, and GZA. I love RZA. I've like, I love him as a person, but like the Bobby Digital stuff was terrible.
Oh, I really come on.
The Bobby Digital, I love that album.
I mean, the B, the O, the B, the B, the Y, the D, the I, the G, the I, the T, the A, the L, the digital. Digital. Come on, man.
That used to be his ringtone. That used to be Bobby's ringtone.
I love Bobby Digital.
That used to be his ringtone for me.
I will say the thing that I do dig about RZA is I like his voice and his cadence.
Yeah.
They are both very kind of unorthodox.
Yeah. And I really like his stuff on his early Wu-Tang albums, but he kind of like gets away from that. I really like his production.
Of course.
I watched The Man with the Iron Fist 1 and 2. Like,
two was a bad choice, but I enjoyed one. I enjoyed one. I'm with you, Jared. I liked the first one. The second one, I was like, what is going on here? They brought back like the Asian Prince dude.
Asian Prince dude. Wait, hey, hang on.
He was cool.
Asian
Prince. But he didn't need to be in part two.
Asian Prince was badass. Like, he was the jam. Asian Prince was the dude.
I don't know.
They were definitely just like, here's a film budget. Do whatever you want. And then he did it. And I respect that, like, creatively and everything. But yeah, I really think one is like just fun. Yeah. But two's brutal.
Yeah. It's a hard watch.
Yeah. If I'm being honest with the group and all the listeners of the podcast and the members of the Killer Bee Swarm, I did not get through two. I watched like 10 minutes of it and I was like, I'm good.
I was fine with the first one. Yeah.
I've seen all I need to see of this and I never turned it back on. I was really stoked about it, but yeah. Now what's your favorite Ghostface solo record?
Supreme Clientele.
Okay.
Without like a beat. I love that album. I think it's probably my favorite album of all time.
Okay. Oh, really?
Ooh. Yeah.
No, I'm gonna have to say Liquid Swords.
Well, Liquid Swords is a GZA record.
I know, but Liquid Swords is my favorite Wu-Tang solo.
Yeah, yeah. I think
total.
Like all my favorite like solo Wu-Tang albums are all Ghost albums. Like I'm also really big into Fish Scale.
That's my favorite. Fish Scale is my favorite. Yeah.
But I think like Supreme Clientele, he like just came back from Africa. He almost died from diabetes. He just wanted to like get back into rap and do his thing again. And it's an album that it really comes across that he just loves doing this and loves being fucking good at it and loves being fucking Ghostface. And it was just, it comes across to me really well. And I really like that.
His storytelling is impeccable.
Oh yeah.
Like best. He's
best.
Yeah. By far and away, like his storytelling is so good. Did you happen to watch the versus battle between him and Raekwon the Chef?
I did not. I was really like, someone had sent it to me. I was working and someone sent it to me and I was like, man, I really just hope it turns into an only made for Cuban Links like mashup. They're just like, never mind. We're just going to do all the songs from Only Made for Cuban Links.
It was really interesting because I mean, like, I can't remember what the first song Ghost did, but right out of the box, you could tell that Raekwon was taking it seriously because he did Shrimp on the Barbie from the Outkast record. And I was like, ooh, that's a good verse. So yeah, it went on for like an hour and 45 minutes. I watched probably 20 minutes of it and it was really good. It still had that hip hop concert vibe of I'm just gonna sing over my song, which I kind of can't stand, you know, like I'm just gonna mouth the words over the words that are playing over the DJ booth. But it was still fun to watch. I love both of those guys a lot, so that was cool.
Yeah, I love Raekwon. I really love Raekwon because he's always been like, he was really open about his beef with RZA.
Yeah,
and now I like really really am into like that sort of authenticity where he's just like, yeah, I don't fucking like him. Yeah. Like everybody else tried to play it off and Raekwon was not having that.
Well, I mean, I could see how that would happen. I mean, you go out and you do these solo records and you do really well for yourself. And then like you come back together to form a group and RZA tries to dictate what's happening. And it's like, dude, you've been meditating and like eating vegan. Like you don't know what hip hop's about anymore. Like RZA and Ghostface are still in the streets making hits and shit, you know?
Yeah. And they like, I think I was reading about the last album is that or I think it was maybe around the time that Once Upon a Time in Shaolin was kind of doing its big art house run, but RZA is like, I'm never putting together the group for another album. It's going to be Ghost, because everybody still has like a lot of love and respect for Ghost, and he's out here. And RZA was like, I'm out here doing movies. I'm out here doing books. I'm out here with my meditation stuff and yoga and shit. And so Ghost is responsible for the next Wu-Tang Clan album.
That's cool.
And that's, yeah, I think that's like really exciting, because Ghost is obviously, I think, probably has the most successful solo musical career.
So. Yeah, I could see that. And I would like to see them kind of get back to the 36 Chambers route, where everybody puts in a verse and they only pick the best ones. Like, I don't need to hear, not every song needs to be 10 minutes long. Like, I don't need to hear like a Capadonna verse. No offense to Capadonna, who I enjoy because he's in that little clique of dudes of Wu-Tang members I like, but like, yeah, I don't need that. Like, just give me the best like four people and then be done with it. Like, I don't need 7 minute songs.
Yeah, and like, even then, you know, I think Protect Your Neck is a song off of 36 Chambers that has every single one of them doing a verse, and that whole song, it's they're all super good, like particularly good verses. And so it's really strange to me that, well, it's not strange, like I get it, but like, by the time they finished, you know, A Better Tomorrow, it was definitely like, we'll just all take a turn.
Yeah.
If it sucks, it sucks. You know, we're just all going to take a turn.
Yeah, totally. Like, let's skip this one. What's his name? The guy who I don't like at all.
Is it You God that you don't like?
Yes. Let's skip this turn, You God. Like, we're good. Like, we're good. Let's take a break. Hey, You God, here's $15. Why don't you go get everybody some coffee? And then we'll do this song while you're out. Aww.
Poor You God.
Here, take Capadonna with you, and because there's gonna be a lot of coffee. So maybe get pastries too. Maybe make two stops, because there's that donut chef that we really like. So go there too. Yeah. So you do that.
That's like I feel bad for You God, because no, You God's never like anybody's favorite. You know, no one's ever like, oh man, even like Master Killer, who I really like, no one's ever like, oh, you know, who's your favorite member of the Wu-Tang Clan? Oh, You God. Like, it never happens. And it's just super sad. Like,
I mean, nobody's going to say, I don't even think You God's parents would say that. They'd be like, I really like Raekwon.
They're not going to say Raekwon. They're going to say Inspect the Deck. Like, it's only going to be a couple rungs above him, just to add insult to injury.
You know what? I like Inspect the Deck. I think Inspect the Deck is cool. He's always good for like three really hot verses per album. You know?
To be fair, I love Inspect a Deck, but his first solo album, I think, is Uncontrolled Substance.
Mm-hmm.
And that shit is good. Yeah. I really like Uncontrolled Substance. And obviously, he's got like that super iconic verse on Triumph.
Yeah. And then like, his shit in Above the Clouds is hot too, with Gangstar. Yeah. That's a great beat right there. That's a great song.
Yeah. But his later solo stuff is a little bit eh. But Uncontrolled Substance is a really good solo Clan album.
Okay, so if you had to do a top five Wu-Tang Clan solo records.
Three of them would be Ghost albums.
Okay.
Like, I think my top number one would be Supreme Clientele.
Okay.
And then number two would probably be Liquid Swords.
Okay.
Oh, all right. Then,
yeah, I love GZA. And then...
Jizz is like 75 years old.
Yeah.
He's like 1,000 years old.
He's just, he like quit rapping and he was like, oh, I'm going to do physics now. And now he like goes and does physics at Harvard and shit. And I'm like,
only Wu-Tang members can do that shit then, right?
Yeah. They're like, oh, like, what are your specialties in physics? And he's like, oh, I'm part of the Wu-Tang Clan. And they're like, oh, okay.
Come on. We form Voltron. It's like, all right, that sounds. Okay.
Physics tell us that Wu-Tang Clan ain't nothing to fuck with.
Yeah, exactly. That's tried and true. And then Fish Scale.
Okay.
And 12 Reasons to Die, and then it would be Uncontrolled Substance.
Wow. Okay. Wow, that's surprising.
That's a different list. I've never heard that list down before.
See, I would go Fish Scale, Only Built for Cuban Links, Liquid Swords, and I would have to throw ODB solo record up in there.
See, I like the ODB one.
ODB solo record is uncontrollable madness.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah. It is completely insane.
So this is like always the part of the Wu-Tang conversation where people turn on me. I love ODB. I respect what ODB did and his verses. I don't care for his rapping style. The sing-songy thing always feels really strange to me. And like, I love Baby I Got Your Money and Shimmy Shimmy. Like, I respect it. It's just not my personal, I don't want to listen to a full album of it. Oh, I think, man, is like the best way to summon that up.
Yeah.
I can listen to it like by a song, but the whole album, I can't do it. I almost feel bad that I didn't include Cuban Links now in my list though, to be fair.
Do you know what record I really like too is Wu Massacre. Do you remember the Wu Massacre record? It was it was Ghostface, Raekwon, and Method Man. It was real short. It was like probably 30 minutes long, and I think the three of them were together only on like one or two songs, but it's pretty damn good.
Yeah, did you ever listen to Grave Diggers?
Oh, I did.
That's RZA's side.
Yeah,
isn't it? Yeah,
that's like horror hip hop stuff, dude. Yeah. It's really cool.
I love that. I love the Grave Diggers.
Real strange.
Yeah, interesting. And I don't know. Were you giving this to the podcast that didn't play you? Doesn't make sense. This seems like
this gold. This is podcast gold. What are you talking about, Jared?
I didn't get asked about. I think people think I'm going to organically bring up the Wu-Tang Clan because I talk about them all the time. Okay. But I'm like never certain that it's like the Venn diagram of comics and Wu-Tang Clan.
I mean, it always goes together, and pro wrestling. Like, you have to like pro wrestling.
So. Yeah, Method Man wrote comics.
Yeah.
As did RZA.
I mean, they had a comic book. Who was the artist that did the Wu-Tang Clan comic back in the day? I can't remember the dude's name, but I was sitting across from him one year at Heroes, and he had these stacks of pages he was selling on his table at Heroes. And I was like, oh shit, that's the Wu-Tang Clan guy. And I walked over to him, and he had all these beautiful pages of like Thor comics and, you know, DC stuff. And I'm looking through the pages. I'm like, hey man, I love your work. And he's like, oh, thanks. And he especially like beamed up because it was Friday. It was a slow Friday at Heroes. And I was like, I see you got all these pages for it. He's like, yeah, man, take a look. We got all kinds of stuff. I was like, yo, you wouldn't happen to have any of those Wu-Tang Clan pages, would you? And he was like, nope. And just like, it just shut him down. He's like, oh, I can't believe all the shit I've done in comics that you're going to bring up the fucking Wu-Tang Clan comic. I was like, yeah, that shit was hot. Like,
Ghost is 12 Reasons to Die.
Matthew Rosenberg.
Matthew Rosenberg, yeah.
Yeah. When I met Matt, we have a mutual friend, and he was here in Cincinnati, and I met him for the first time. And the first question out of my mouth was, yo, how's Ghostface? That was the first thing I asked him. I was like, is Ghostface cool or what? He's like, yeah, he's pretty cool. I was like, that's awesome. Like, that was the first thing I wanted to know.
I missed 12 Reasons to Die when it was in single issues. And then Black Mask sat on the trade for like a really long time. And so I kept going to cons and listening to Rosenberg talk about how, yeah, like my first real comic was 12 Reasons to Die. And who doesn't want to write song or, you know, comics about hip hop. And then like one year at Dallas Fan Expo, I think I like walked up and I was like, man, I can't find 12 Reasons to Die anywhere. I'm like super into the Wu-Tang Clan and I really like comics. Like, can you just talk to me about it? And I think I sat at his table for like 15 minutes where he like was just telling me about the book and the process. Cause like RZA curated it, you know? And so he just like told me about the process and I was just sitting there like listening. I think Cat Fox walked by and like sat down for like 2 minutes and then like got up and left and did something else. That's cause awesome. I'm just hogging up his table.
Now the name of the guy who did the Wu-Tang Clan comics back in the 90s was Clayton Henry.
Okay.
When you meet Clayton Henry, do not ask him about the Wu-Tang Clan comic. He will not be jazzed to talk about it. Now, this will be the last thing that we'll talk about Wu-Tang Clan, and then we'll move on to like sandwiches or
ice cream
or
ice
wrestling cream. Or whatever.
We said we would ask those questions.
Whatever else you want to talk about. Have you heard the RZA meditation stuff?
I have not. I have his I have the Wu-Tang Clan like it's like the philosophy book, but I haven't heard
that. I believe it was put out by like Sobey or somebody like that. Like, RZA does like a meditation where it's like five tracks. It's like 25 minutes long and he's guiding you through a meditation. And it is the fucking funniest shit you've ever heard in your whole life, because everything he's saying is something that you would hear someone speaking about meditation would say, but it's coming from RZA. And he's still got that like, yo, you're going to have to do all this shit. And it's just like,
you're going to have to do all this meditation shit. Bing.
Yeah. Bong, bong. You know what I'm saying? It's just, you're just in like this whole different place. It's the weirdest kind of meeting of two worlds. But if you like Wu-Tang Clan and you find some of RZA's antics genuine, but comical, I think you'll dig it. Okay. Because I feel like he's a genuine dude and he's super into this shit, but he's still RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan. And it's still hard I just hear him say March of the Wooden Soldiers, that voice, you know what I'm saying? That verse from Triumph. That's the only voice that I hear, you know?
Yeah, no, I definitely like approach. I feel like everybody that knows RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan and not the Wu-Tang Clan from RZA accepts that he does like this meditation thing, but it is sort of like funny, you know, like I've listened to you like rap about murdering people and now you're gonna have a meditation Monday. Yeah. And like I'm like, okay, like
I mean, it's, I think, like I said, it comes from a genuine place, but yeah, it's comical because it's still RZA's voice.
Yeah.
Like he's still got that cadence and it's just, it cracks me up and I really enjoy it. Now, enough about the Wu-Tang Clan. I think we've gone on long enough. Again, this is a wonderful podcast. I couldn't be happier with the way this has turned out. Yeah. So tell us about your comic, I guess. Is it about this?
Yeah, so we have a comic on Kickstarter called The Twin Blades, and I like initially pitched it on Twitter like way back as Mexicans with Swords, and that's still kind of the spirit of it, you know. Nice. I think being Mexican in any sort of like creative outlet, there's sort of like a real heavy-handed push on immigration stuff and like cartel stuff. And I don't really have any interest in writing stuff like that. Like, I really want to do like sci-fi and fantasy and like just different things that don't involve, you know, Dia de los Muertos and stuff like that. Like just, you know, I think, to be totally honest with you, I think I just watched The Tax Collector and I was like, oh, this sucks. Like, this is, I have to watch Shia LaBeouf walk around and pretend he's a cholo on for 2 hours. And I guess nobody made me watch that movie, but I did. So I kind of just did this comic about these two magic swords that are linked to Aztec mythology. And we took a lot of influence from like samurai films and anime and manga that have like Samurai Champloo and stuff like that, that I was really into growing up. And it's a really, really fun, like 44-page action comic that's just, at its core, is about Mexicans with swords, but is also about Aztec mythology and believing in yourself.
Which is awesome, because the thing about Aztec mythology and D&D, I always had a hardest time when I was a kid, when you look through like the, I forgot the name of the book, that the Legends and Lore, I think it was called. And it was like, I remember the book being purple on the outside and having like all these different deities on it. And then you get to the Aztec section, they look so damn cool, but I could never pronounce a damn one of their names as a kid. So like that has always been the problem for me as a white dude. I've been like, well, I want to know how to say it and I want to know how to say it right. So when I was looking through your comic, I'm like, I need a pronunciation key, man. Can you tell us how to say the names and what the gods are representative of and how they play out in your book?
Yeah. So we have two major gods that are active in the book. The first one is Tezcatlipoca. Tezcatlipoca is kind of like, Aztec mythology doesn't really assign any one god like one thing. It's sort of a personality. Like they have like a governing abilities over multiple things, but the root of their characters, I guess, is sort of rooted to their personality. Tezcatlipoca is really often cast as sort of like an omnipotent god. He and his brother Quetzalcoatl constantly like fight over who gets to rule the universe, which the Aztecs believed we were in the era of the fifth sun. The previous four were destroyed in conflicts between this Kalipoka and his brother. And so he's kind of like his this omnipotent god who's often associated with like a black obsidian mirror and smoke. He's really just kind of this real kind of shady guy. He really believes he was like a god of justice, like a real vicious god that was really believed in challenge and believed in paying someone for what they've done. And then the other god we chose is kind of a lesser god named Xolotl, who is the soul. He's like the soul guide of the dead, right? Like I think the right word is like a psychopomp. He takes you soul from Earth to after you die to like the land of the dead,
like an avatar. Or
yeah. And we had the cool thing about Xolotl that I really like that we sort of went and ran with is that like at the creation of the fifth sun, he was supposed to sacrifice himself with his family to create the sun, and he didn't. Duh. And then he felt really bad. And
obviously,
you don't commit the ritual sacrifice, you feel guilty, you know? And he cried so bad, his eyes fell out of his head.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that's what we made the magic swords from in the comic, is that they're cool. Literally forged from a god's eyes. But yeah, he's like a dog-headed god who has no eyes. And he just like walks, his whole thing is that he walks the sun through the land of the dead every night and then back into the earth. And so he's got like a real interesting thing there. But yeah, those are the two main ones in our book that kind of, there's definitely like a greater conflict that is more off the page, but those two are the ones that are directly in opposition to each other at the time of the book.
That's cool. And this thing is super successful on Kickstarter. You hit your funding goal. You got 15 days left, 251 backers. That's got to make you feel good about your idea. Yes. And the project.
Yeah. I was like really trying. So it's my first Kickstarter ever. I was really nervous because the whole idea of Kickstarter kind of freaks me out. Like
as it should.
Yeah.
If it doesn't, you're not doing it right.
It's an asshole puckering process, my friend.
Yeah. And I was kind of like, you know, we're going to go in, I'm going to try and get the goal as low as we can. So I funded most of the art in the book before we ever went to Kickstarter. Like we're like 30 pages deep, I think. And I was like, we'll go and we'll just try and raise the printing costs. And then it like, as we were building up to it, we were seeing that there was kind of like a good positive response to the art that we were showing, to the little bit of hints. We didn't tell anybody like real story details until we literally launched it on the day, is where everybody kind of got an idea, because the book's really crazy. Like it's sort of like a fever dream. Like if I had a fever dream, it would be Aztec mythology and cyborgs with giant swords. And that's exactly the book that we made. You know?
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so I was like, well, let's sit on it for as long as we can. And then we can see kind of in real time how people reacted. And then we got funded in 4 days. It was like the craziest 4 days of my life, because I was sitting there like watching Kickstarter, because I was like, is it going to happen? Like, is it done? Is it over? You know, like sort of like if you were watching Frodo throw the ring in from live from the Shire, like, is he doing it or not? You know, like, I need to know, is kind of how it felt.
I know. I do the exact same thing. I watch it like a ball game. Like I just sit there and sit in front of my computer. Like, all right, when's the next one? Oh, we got one. Oh no, we got one. Like here, ring the bell, ring the bell, ring the bell, wife. Let's ring the bell.
I'll get a text at like 2 a.m. that says we got one. And then I'll be asleep. And then the next day I wake up and then there'll be another one at like 9 a.m. Like, oh, we got another one. And there'll be like an exclamation point on that.
We run Kickstarter, is there points in the day? I'll just wake up and check it at 3 a.m. and go, okay, cool. Last one I went to bed, we had 240 backers. Now we have 246 backers. Cool. Okay. Awesome. I can go back to sleep. And like, that's just how my brain works because I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah. My wife, I was like writing down, I was waking up in the middle of the night and writing down how many backers we had so I could know if there was improvement when I woke up the next time. And my wife was like, you got to stop. You can't do that. Like you got to figure out, you got to just sleep.
Nah, man, because it's, it's the way that we can get our projects done if publishers don't want them. Like it's, and it leads to more work for you and you're building your audience. Like this is how, you know, this is how a lot of people are building their careers.
Yeah. You know? And that's exactly it. Like I didn't even bother pitching it to anybody. Like I know that there's like a couple publishers that are doing one-shots as like a smaller publishers that are doing one-shot things and looking for one-shot pitches. And I didn't even bother because I was like, man, I want to tell the whole story, finish it, and then worry about, okay, is someone going to publish it? Because like, it's like, I want to tell the full thing. I want it to be out there. And, but yeah, man, it was like, this is like, I'm planning on doing two more of these.
Nice.
And yeah. And it's, I think I'm crazy at this point, but like, it got funded, I guess, is the thing.
251 people can't be wrong, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we're pushing it, though, for the next 2 weeks.
And it seems like this came out, that your Kickstarter for Twin Blades came out at a good time, because your book, Dryfooted, kind of launched around the same time, and you couldn't find a copy of this book anywhere. Like, it was impossible to find. Tell us about Dryfoot, because I heard so much about it, so much buzz on the internet, I couldn't even get a copy.
Yeah, so Dryfoot's like a story of four teenage friends who are growing up in this really violent time in Miami in 1984. It's Little Havana. There's like a lot of gangs and a lot of drugs. And these four teenage friends want to not be there. They want to escape out west. And so to Hollywood, that's like their big dream, is they want to live in California. And they hatch this plan to rob a drug lord of a lot of cash to do that. And so I was describing it as like four kids walking to a bank meets Miami Vice. And it was a really fun book that we had a really good time doing it. And yeah, we dropped number one was originally, unfortunately, Dryfoot came out. Originally it was supposed to be, I think June and June of last year. And then the COVID happened. And so it got pushed to September of last year. And then fortunately, it had a good response. People picked it up. People dug it. But it was just a crazy time to be selling comics.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah. We had like an FOC. FOC, I got a really hard lesson in FOC with Dryfoot. And, I'm not a fan. And we were like, we're trying to sell book two. And I know like everybody who listens to this podcast, I'm sure knows this, but I was trying to sell book two before anybody had sold book one.
Yeah.
And right. I'm like, yeah, people are going to come back. Sure. You know, go for it. But it sold crazy and good and glad people really liked it. And so right after we published the trade in February. And then I think like 3 or 4 weeks later, I was launching the Kickstarter because I don't want to give myself a second to rest.
Well, I mean, you got to strike while the iron's hot, baby.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what my whole mentality was, is to ride that wave into the Kickstarter and then start building that base for the next two. So hopefully that's what happens.
I mean, you know, Jared, it sounds like you got it all figured out, bro. So that's awesome.
It's an act.
That's the best part of it, because I think everyone is doing the same act.
Like everybody has that. Yeah.
I basically yesterday with my wife at like 9:45 while watching Law and Order on, you know, we just basically broke down in like a imposter syndrome kind of melodramatic bullshit. It just melted down, because I think we're all going through the same shit. It's like, you know, it's all, everybody's trying to figure out the next step and how to go and stay in one foot in front of the other, so nobody finds out they have no fucking clue what they're doing.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's kind of the basis of it.
Especially in comics. Yeah. You know, it feels like that's maybe more amplified in comics than a lot of other mediums, where it's literally like, you're just running from whatever this week's crisis is to next week's, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's awesome, dude. So you said you got two more Kickstarters planned for the rest of the year. It's March. So when are you going to launch these other books? And can you give us like a taste of what we may be looking at here?
So I'm launching the third one in the first quarter of 2022.
Okay.
That one I think is going to end up being a little bit bigger than the two that I'm working, than Twin Blades and this next one. So I wanted a little bit more time with that one, but I'm aiming to launch the second one in September.
Okay.
And we're starting art on that in 2 days. So it's going to be, without giving like too much of it away, it's a demonic possession story. That's sort of like, it's like Inception set in the world of Sucker Punch.
All right.
And a lot of really crazy imagery, and that's really rooted in like there's a person possessed by a demon, and that person has dementia, and it's kind of rooted in my grandfather who battled dementia until his last day, and kind of exploring like memory and how we can kind of get memory weaponized against us, and how much it means to us once it starts becoming something that's fleeting. And so I wanted to kind of play with that. And it's a really, really cool story. It's really, really, really heavy. Obviously, like as somebody, like part of me was writing my grandfather to some extent. But yeah, we start art on that in 2 days. I'm really excited. And people that like drive, or Twin Blades is really lighthearted. It's really fun. It's really fast paced. This one is like the total opposite. It's just brutally emotional and heavy, but I think it's going to be fun for the most part when you're not crying.
And I think that that's cool because that's weirdly how we kind of do things. We'll do something light and fun and then do something with a much heavier tone and then have to cleanse our palate of all that heavy. And you get, you go back and do something light and fun again. And basically pull from childhood instead of actual life experience, childhood nostalgia or whatever. You pull like, oh, I really love this cartoon, so we'll like do something like this and mix it with this and do these things, versus like, this is something that actually happened to me that I actually want to kind of like I have to put out there for me, you know? So like, and then that sounds like exactly what you're doing. Am I on point with that?
Yeah, I had finished Dryfoot, and Dryfoot's really rooted in my own personal experiences.
Right.
Like I was part of a group of troublemaking teenagers that were, you know, in trouble a lot. And so, and that book, it's Dryfoot's kind of light, but it has like a really heavy theme. And some really heavy shit happens in Dryfoot. And so I like wrote Twin Blades when I was trying to figure out which book I was going to do first. I was like, you know, Twin Blades is fun. It's going to be a little bit more lighthearted. It's something I want to do so that I cannot deal with my childhood trauma at this exact moment or twice back to back, you know? And so, and then now this one, I'm like, okay, now's the time that I can, now that I feel in a good state to do this, I can handle doing this one about, you know, demons and my grandfather.
That's interesting. That's cool. And it sounds something very personal. Did you have a hard time? Did you have a hard time doing that? Something that was so personal for you?
Yeah. But I think like writing for me feels really therapeutic and cathartic, like a lot of the time. And I'm somebody who feels really awkward talking about like things that are happening right then and there and how I feel about them. I'd rather like, I really hope my therapist doesn't listen to this because she's going to be like scribbling notes. But like, it's like, I really don't want to deal with it right now. I want to survive this problem. And then I'll think about how I feel about it. And right now she's just scribbling angrily in her notes. But so that's kind of how the next one is that it's really me dealing with, I'm essentially writing my grandfather and the problems that he had and his relationship with my grandmother and my father. And it was really, really hard. Like there was times where I was really brought to tears because I'm really close with my family. I haven't seen any of them in almost a year. The last time I saw my parents and my sister was at my grandfather's funeral last June. And so, it was a really hard experience, but it was something that I felt like I needed to write out and get that whole thing out of my system because, you know, like, I don't know. I don't think I ever had any time to really deal with the fact that my grandfather died because I was in the plague in an economic recession in Texas.
Oh.
And then, so I was like, okay, and let me just try and get my shit under control. But yeah, so it was emotional, but it was a really, I think that it makes it a better book in a lot of ways. And it's a lot, and I think it's going to be a lot for people to connect with. And I think that's a good thing in itself.
Yeah, totally. I think people connect with that sort of genuine emotion when you put it behind the page. And I think it's there, like when as writers, when we put something down, there's pieces of us in everything, but not. <You're right. coughs> I'm dying.
I hear that.
I'll be all right. Pieces of us in everything, but not like until you read separate things do you get the whole view. I'm sorry, I'm dying. Let me die quietly.
Yeah.
like a mosaic, but of traumas.
Exactly. He knew what I was talking about.
Okay, sorry about that, guys.
Yeah. The sparkling water I was drinking went down the wrong pipe. And tried to kill me. It was a murder plot. We're supposed to ask you what your favorite sandwich is, Jared. We were asked to ask you.
I actually made my favorite sandwich today, in honor of that question. It's a real Texan answer. So it's pulled pork sandwiches.
Okay.
I'm really good at cooking. You know, I'm gonna just throw it out there. I'm super good at it. And
And you're modest too, which I did.
I mean, yeah. And we also know who to invite to the Airbnb when we're at a con in there, right? Yeah, the kitchen. Yeah.
I'm not going to call myself the Mexican Gordon Ramsay, but I would like to imply it. So, I make a pulled pork sandwich with a jalapeno cilantro slaw and a chipotle barbecue sauce, and it's really, really good.
That's fancy.
And, yeah,
this sounds amazing.
It's like a long, arduous process. Like I slow cook the pulled pork because it's like, so it's already like a 5-hour thing. But I love pulled pork. I love barbecue sandwiches, period. But that in particular sandwich is my go-to.
All right.
If I have like a day to spare.
Yeah. That's got to be a bummer though. Cause I mean, you can't just go to the grocery store and pick up some cold cuts. Like you got to plan your favorite sandwich, you know?
Yeah.
It sounds like a real bummer.
It is. But like, I mean, I'm in West Texas. Like if I really wanted a pulled pork sandwich, I could go to a number of places.
Yeah.
But like, I can't have mine. So that creates its own problem. But if I was like, oh man, I need a pulled pork, I could go like a handful.
And if you do make pork like of that nature, it's going to stick around for a couple days. So you always have leftovers, and it's always things like that are always better on the second day.
Yeah,
that's what everybody says, and I don't know if it's true. I just believe it because my mom said it enough, so I'm down with that.
That's just your mom encouraging you to eat leftovers, man.
Well, I mean, I love leftovers. That's my jam.
I don't mind them either, but the kids don't love leftovers.
I don't understand that. It's food just, 2 days. It's wonderful.
I think I can eat the same thing all the time, so I'm a kind of a weird person with that.
It's like, so much less work.
I think anything with the sauce is better the next day because it has it gets cold and it thickens and it just sits with it. It's like super tops. I love leftovers. Because like I don't have to make it cool, it's done.
Like I don't like cooking, so like I agree with you 100% here. You like cooking, you already said you like it. I don't Jared, like it. I don't like to have to do it.
This is, I mean, you like Wu-Tang Clan, you like leftovers. I mean, this is like if we were on like a first date, I'd be all like, when are we gonna go out again? Like wait,
you gotta ask them the favorite ice cream question because it's ice cream.
Do they have ice cream in Texas or is it too hot?
we do, but it's all Bluebell.
Okay.
Right.
I've never had Bluebell, so I can't say.
It's not bad. It's not bad. I've had it before.
All right.
Did you guys hear about the whole Bluebell shortage like 3 or 4 years ago?
Yes.
I didn't hear this story. Tell me.
I'll let him tell you. It's awesome.
I there was like an outbreak of, I can't remember if it was E. coli or Salmonella.
It was Salmonella.
Ugh.
Yeah, it was Salmonella.
They shut it down and like cleaned everything, but you couldn't find Bluebell. The shelves were just empty. They had to close down the entire plant and clean it and sanitize it. And then it came back and then they found it again.
Oh my God.
So there was like a week where you could get ice cream and then it was all shut down again. And it was like it was right in the middle of summer. It was like a whole Texas wide emergency. Like,
what are we gonna do?
Yeah, Bluebell watch, you know, like when is it getting back? You know, it was sort of like the boat, the ship that was blocking the Suez Canal. That's kind of what happened in Texas.
That was a great story, though. I was fascinated by the idea that the ship was basically completely stopping world commerce. Like, that was an amazing story.
I told my boss, I didn't like realize how large it was. And it's massive. And I was like, I don't get it. Why don't they just blow it up? And my
boss, that was your answer.
Yeah. I was like, they should just, if it's stuck, why bother doing all this? Just take the shit off and blow it up. And my boss was like, Jared, it's fucking huge. It's like a massive fucking ship.
At that point, your boss thought you were a moron when you said that. Why did we hire this dude? Like, what is he here for?
That was exactly it. I was sitting there like, I don't understand why this is an international crisis. Just blow it up and put it on YouTube, you know?
The ship is, somebody really put it into perspective. The ship was 400 meters long. And the actual, if you're a fan of Star Trek, the TOS Enterprise was only 305 meters long. So this ship was 100 meters longer than the original Enterprise.
Wow.
Think about that. And like, it shut down world commerce. Like, I couldn't help it. I was just watching this thing on Twitter every day going like, this is the crazy, this fucking ship is going to collapse the world economy. Like, how is this possible? There's no way the guy who's the captain of the ship has a job.
The captain's fine, but the helmsman, the guy who was driving at that time,
I don't know.
He was like, he's done. That guy's done.
Parallel park for shit. I bet. Yeah. Brutally bad at it. I would bet everything in my bank account that he just fucking sucks at parallel parking.
Parallel parking can be difficult.
Yeah, they're gonna launch some sort of documentary because I have to know how your whole job is to guide big ship through narrow canal and you just royally fuck it up. Like, yeah. I have to know what happened. Yeah. I'm so curious.
Like, and that's something too that you can't just go, oh shit, back it up. Let's feel there's no way you're gonna get out of this one unscathed. The whole world's gonna know. You're not winning employee of the month for a really long time, ship driver.
Like that guy, you can't fuck up one time in that situation.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't be like, oh, you know what, Bill, you know, did they tell you about the time Bill fucked up? Like, it's no, everyone knows. You're on national media, everybody on Twitter's making fun of you.
This is world media stuff, dude. Like, this almost shut down the whole economy. Like, I don't know if you looked at like the pictures of the Indian Ocean and around the Cape of Good Hope, but all the ships on radar and stuff. It was fucking crazy.
Yeah, they were like, we'll just go. Like, I was reading something about how like a bunch of these ships were choosing to go through the Horn of Africa or around the Horn of Africa, and how it's like they're now, all of those ships were really concerned about piracy and they're not equipped to handle if there's like a set of pirates attacking, and obviously clearly that hasn't been a problem so far, but that's where I was really like interested. Is I was like, oh man, is it about to be like a fucking field day if you're a pirate in Somalia, just about to have like a really good time? But
but after a while there'd be so many ships the pirates would just be exhausted. What the hell are they gonna do with all this stuff? You know?
Yeah, I was like, what are you going to do with England's coffee?
Yeah. All the tea in China, you know? Like, how's that going to work? Well, that's awesome. Well, Jared, we really don't have anything else, but this was a wonderful conversation, friend. Where can we pick up Dryfoot? You said that's in trades now if we wanted to pick that up, because that book was hot to death. Like, you couldn't find it anywhere. So if I wanted to pick this up, where could I get it?
You can get it at, you can ask your local comic shop, and you should always do that first. If your comic shop cannot get a hold of it or they don't want to, which they shouldn't, there's plenty still over at Mad Cave's website at madcavestudios.com, and you can find the trade there. Plus a bunch of my friends have good books over there as well. So
cool. That's awesome. And then your Kickstarter for the Twin Swords is running now. This will be out in about 3 or 4 days. So you'll have 10 days left to pick that up, just go to kickstarter.com and search The Twin Blades, and you can get in on this fun looking book as well. Jared, man, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Where can we find you on social media?
Yes, where can we find you on social media?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Jared Lujan, JarredLujan. If you don't like either of those, or you think that I'm annoying on Twitter, you can go to my website from my Twitter and go and sign up for my newsletter, which is once a month, and I have to write that in like 2 days. So
how long have you been writing your newsletter? How long has that been?
This year.
Okay, so the Word Bro started our newsletter too. How do you think it's going so far? Like, what do you write about in your newsletter?
I usually just write about like stories that I'm working on that are coming out in anthologies or coming out that are about to be published, things like that. I gave everybody sneak peeks at the Twin Blades.
That's nice.
The art and sort of descriptions of what they looked like. So if you followed the newsletter, you were the first one to see the character designs, the swords, to get the plot idea, stuff like that. And then last month I wrote about the Arctic storm that hit Texas and how bad it was here, and like things were freezing up and Texas was turning off the power. So there was like a little bit of personal stuff in there, but it's mostly comics. And every now and then I re-listen to a Wu-Tang Clan album. I feel like I need to write some words about, but
nice
recipes, man.
Nice. Recipes. Maybe share some of your recipes.
That's a good idea. Actually, that's genius. I might do that.
And then you can tell the story, or you know what you could do? Just be the recipe guy that just gets right to the fucking point and doesn't write 7,000 words about their grandmother and fucking Christmas. Gonna punch you in the face. I just want to know how to make ribs, lady. What the fuck are we doing here?
Gotta earn it.
Yeah, no, I don't need to. This is preposterous. I can just call my mom. She'll
have the internet. I don't have to earn anything anymore.
So there you go. So Jared, thank you so much, man, for coming on. We really appreciate it. It's always a pleasure. And hey, man, good luck.
Thank you. Y'all, thank you all for having me.
Jared Lujan. He is the writer and creator of Dryfoot, which is on Mad Cave Studio, and he's got his own book that's on Kickstarter right now called The Twin Blades.
Blades, blades, blades.
Sounds a lot of fun, man. He was a cool dude, and like Kevin, you said before we hopped on to do the outro, I mean, it's easy to talk about Wu-Tang Clan.
It is, and hey, Jared was a nice guy to talk to, and it was lots of fun to talk to him, so like, I mean, it's always things like that that make you want to get behind creators, like things that you know about them. So, and that's part of the reason why we do this podcast.
Yeah, buddy. All right. So I guess that's it, man. We're going to get out of here. We'll be back next week with a brand new guest. Who's our guest next week, Kevin?
I believe it's Dan Faust, who is a retailer.
Ooh, it's always fun to talk to retailers.
Yes, Dan is a great retailer. He was one of the initial supporters of Metal Shark Bro. When we've told the story on the podcast before, we were doing our cold calling. We divided up our list, and Dan was one of the retailers I called, and he was super happy to talk with me about Metal Shark, and he even invited me to the store for a signing, which I have done two signings at Ultimate. It was a different shop then, but now he's at Ultimate Comics, I believe in Cary. I think.
Are you big time?
No, but you are.
Nah, son, so you big time. I never. So, I mean, I didn't get invited to signing. Look at
you. That's because you live in Ohio.
That's true.
I live 2 hours away.
But you big time, Kevin. Don't deny it.
No,
you hot.
Ain't nobody want no Kevin Cuff signed book.
Shit, I do. And if you want a Kevin Cuff signed book, or you want any signed books from the Word Bros, go to thewordbros.com. You'll see a little banner on the website that says buy our books. Click on that banner and you can buy all the Metal Shark Bro your heart wants, all the Ninja Nuns. We even have our image book up there. What's it called, Kevin?
Stairway Anthology.
The Stairway Anthology is there as well. We got a lot of cool stuff up there. You can get some signed stuff from myself or from Kevin, and you can check that out, and you can support the Word Bros and the Word Bros podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. We really appreciate it. We'll be back next week with more good times and fun tunes here on the Word Bros podcast. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Remember to leave a rating or review. 5 stars only.
5 stars.
You're listening to the Word Bros Podcast, thewordbros.com.